saints and sages of all religions. I'm Jack Host. I'm the Lavish Group. Present and bless this meditation. And open the hearts of these loved ones. Free their lives from all obstacles. And bless them with the physical, mental, and spiritual unfoldment. May thy love shine in the sanctuary of their hearts. Lead them from the darkness to the light, the ignorance to the truth, bondage to the freedom, the impractical to the practical. The unconscious to the conscious. Release within them peace that passes all understanding. Repeat.
Om Christ, Om Christ, Om Christ, Om.
Om
Christ, Om Christ, Om Christ, Om.
Om Christ, Om Christ, Om Christ, Om.
Om Christ, Om Christ, Om Christ, Om.
Om Master, Om Master, Om Master, 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 Om.
Om Medulla, Om Medulla, Om Medulla, Om.
Om Medulla, Om Medulla, Om Medulla, Om. Place the left thumb on the right wrist and feel for the pulse beat. The breath and the pulse are one and the same. It's synchronous life. As you identify it, it will lead you back to the source. Those who have the technique, go directly to it. That sign is the ancient way of coming together in spirit. It's always known as fellowship with truth. And in Western thinking, reference is often made to it as when two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. To the initiate, the sense of feeling or recognizing the connectedness with the creative self, this is the name that merges with you and radiates out of the Christ principle, can be felt in a satsang. Sometimes you can feel the presence walk through the room, or you can feel a heightening of your senses. But above all, the peace that gives you strength to go on day to day, moment to moment, becomes self-evident. Some of us may see the form of some exalted saint or holy one. Others may feel or hear the internal music. That is not the full measure of the spiritual intent. The full measure of the spiritual intent is to be able to open your eyes and function here consciously with that internal strength increasing in you. Also, the evidence of an increasing immunity to the breakdown of the body. The body is a temple, and tapping its potential applying it in the waking state is your evidence to you that you have contact with the divine. If someone was to photograph this room with all of us sitting in here and then take the picture and cut it up into 100 little square pieces and give it to someone and say, here is a jigsaw puzzle. See if you can recognize someone you know in the jigsaw puzzle. Then as you struggle to put the pieces together and finally you pinpoint someone in the picture and say, ah, I know this person. that recognition, after all that putting together, is exactly what we have done when we come out of the meditation. Before you came out, sitting in the room and going inward is like putting the pieces together. And when the all is put together, recognizing someone in the picture is like opening your eyes and validating you have something tangible to relate to. If you don't recognize anyone in the picture, then you're still back inside the other room. The emphasis is always after you come out of the meditation. Here is where meditation becomes the meditation of the meditation. When you were sitting down for the last 30 or 40 minutes, you were cleaning up the house for the guest. And God is the guest. In the living body, the unexpected occurs. The unanticipated occurs in the waking state. How the incidences occur during the day and how they fall in place to make a meaningful relationship. This is the conscious meditation. Because it's in the conscious meditation you're living the peace that passes all understanding. We can sit down and close our eyes and spend long hours inside and still fool ourselves that we have found the peace that passes all understanding. Yet when we come out with the eyes open and go through the behavioral movements of the day in the environment and see how these incidences all fall into place in their timing. By the time the day is over, you have lived the conscious meditation. The conscious meditation is your moment the moment living. It is your encounter with the Christ principle inside of you that you have tapped and now recognizing it working outside of you. That's why Jesus said to his disciples, "Come, I'll make you fishers of men." He was giving them the encounter of the working meditation, the living meditation, by going out and functioning with men. One master would say, like a fisherman, you catch fish. And the master is turning to the disciples to go catch souls. I make you fisher of souls. Yet, it could lead you to believe you're out to go convert people and get carried away with the wrong understanding. The conscious meditation has no intention of converting anyone. The conscious meditation is the art of interacting with everyone. learning to realize that everyone is friend and everyone is God. Everyone is a part of the jigsaw puzzle. More important is where you fit in the jigsaw puzzle. See, some of us may feel out of place. But until you recognize where you fit into the jigsaw puzzle, you're not out of place. And it's on the conscious level, the waking state, moment to moment, you have the encounter of knowing in the daily events. You become a center in your day, and the events revolve around you like a spider web, drawing in towards you and falling into place. So when you come out of meditation, you look around, feel this centeredness. You're in this realm. You're in the now. You are the being. This being has no name until someone calls this being by some label that they are familiar to call it, and then this being will compute and respond to that label. But during that time, try to be the being. Try to feel your unity with everything in the waking state. Yukteswar would say, the measurement of your spirituality is determined by the length of time that this peace stays with you in the waking state. For years I struggled to let it work through. 10, 15, an hour, 2 hours, only to realize the information was too generalized. It wasn't specific enough to where it could be 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Now, to help you to appreciate what you have and what you are in a more specific way is that when you come out, try and feel you are like the spider or the center of the target, and the whole thing is revolving around you. And don't associate with your name until the environment interacts or press the program button to your computing mechanism for you to associate with it. Because then it draws out from you. But if you stay in the center and just be the beingness and feel that the beingness has become you, gradually you're not drained away. It begins to stay longer and longer and intensifies itself. That's why Yogananda says self-chosen seclusion is the price of peace, because you're at the center of everything and there is no one while you're in seclusion, is going to call you by your name to drain you off from your being. So periodical seclusion is an asset to enhance this quality. So even in the Christian faith, you take a sabbatical or something, you're looking for a self-chosen seclusion. You can do this at home. You don't want to aggravate anyone in the family who is not familiar with this type of life. And so when they're all sound asleep or gone to work, you have self-chosen seclusion. They're not calling your name. Mommy? Daddy? See. For those moments, Mr. Lin used to close himself up in his office and sit down and keep the secretary on side just to feel this quality. That's the real secret of enhancing the beingness in you. As long as nobody don't punch the program button of your being to attract your attention, it will not drift away or drain away from you. You'll always hold it in focus. So when you see someone who is engrossed in it, you know they've spent a long time working towards where they could acquire a 24-hour day without any interruption from anyone calling them by their name. And it will stay with that person after a while it's there with you. It's the living meditation. That's what they mean now, the peace that passes all understanding. I can't understand how you can be so happy, so forgiving, that all the ridiculous idiosyncrasies that are going around you, you begin to see the comedy of it. Yet, it's in that same state that you have to acquire in order to perform where others fail with the very things that you will perform and make a success. You'll take the very same thing that others have gone ahead and work it through and make a success of it. And others have gone with it and failed, and they don't know how they failed. And what is it you got that made it a success? They have gone through it with the wrong timing. And you going through it knowing it will fall into place. And if you're not pushing it, so you're working with it in that attitude, moment to moment, and it falls in place. Now you think back of your life and think of one incident where it just flowed into place and you begin to see you have the model. As my brother would say yesterday, I went to visit a wonderful man, Andy. He said it's simple, but it ain't easy. So it's simple to tell you about it, but it ain't easy to flip off. But this is the intent of spirituality. It's not those who shout, Lord, 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 all the time, are spiritual. Is the one who is merging in the consciousness and getting up to live moment to moment in a practical way. Jesus made a remark one time. He said, "Oh Jerusalem, oh Jerusalem, how I'd love to gather up like a mother hen gathers its chickens." This particular statement can best be felt or experienced at a satsang. The struggling non-initiate and the initiate who is trying to integrate the consciousness from the verbal oscillation to a non-verbal quietude to feel this inner peace is like chickens. And the mother hen is the creative consciousness trying to pull you away from verbalization in your brain, gather you up, you know, so you don't have this mental struggle verbalizing what you are and what you're not and what's happening to you. So where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. This is the mother henness of God now hovering over to pull you together to feel a unity. It's like all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle now put back in place and you've seen the whole picture for the first time. So group meditation was inspired for that basis or for that reason. So there could be a sort of intracellular connectedness. Those who have the ability to stay longer in the waking state with this sense of peace, by the very principles of the atomic laws, we are atomic in nature, we're electromagnetic principles, we feed others less magnetic and less electrical and less stabilized. And the weak help by the strong, and the strong help by the totality, then everyone becomes strong. But first the weak is helped by the strong, then the strong is helped by the totality. One time I went to a prayer meeting on the reservation, and we all sat down just like this. It was in Arizona. And years ago I used to come to this area, attend researches and prayer meetings in, among the Navajo in the Hill Peace. And one night we're sitting down, and the roadman, that's a fellow like me, they call him the roadman, he shows you the road back to the source. I like how they talk because it's so down to earth. And the kiva is like a pregnant mother, and the earth is the mother. So it's like a dome. And there's a door you walk in, and they say that's the entrance to the umbilical cord. So everyone inside is like unborn children, waiting to be born next day. Well, there we are sitting in the room, and the roadman makes this comment. He says, "Brother, we are asked tonight to pray for a loved one who is ill. But instead of asking you to do that, to pray for a loved one who is ill, why don't we pray for one another?" And he says, "Now, there are 40 people in this room, and if one person prays for the other 39, and then the other 39 prays back for him, compound this mathematically and see what you get." He said, "You're totally bombarded by the end of the night with such healing force, you walk out straight." Because if you turn around and look at each one and wishing them the best and their health and everything, and then this is flipping back around, it's coming back to you, this whole room is generating a force. He didn't say it, pray, the eyes closed. Look at each other like you're greeting and feel the accentuation of the relationship. Well, my experience was very, very rewarding, because before the morning was over, the person who was lying on the back sick was up straight and walking in full control of their life. Yeah. But in the same token, I'm suffering with an aching of pain in my back from the broken bones. And the meeting is over in the morning, and it's just about it. And I said to him, "Brother, I'd like a healing for myself in another way." He says, "Oh." He says, Why didn't you put yourself on the floor with the others and let them pray with you? And I didn't know I had to do that. He says, the meeting is over now and I can't call the people back to pray for you. But I said, that is true, but you believe and I believe, if I pray for me, that can work. But maybe this trip, somebody has to pray for me. And let me be humble enough to receive healing. He said, but brother, the meeting is over. In a conscious way, we can. I said, what you can do is this. You have the understanding. I have the receptivity. Well, all I would like you to do is reach out and tap Brother Jesus with your left hand, take your right hand and zap me. And everybody's going to join and tap in and zap me, and I'll accept because I'm going to put myself in that position. So it was difficult to convince my brother that way, but he looked around and said, all right, never did it before, but better try once, you never know. So I went on the floor there, and he reached up like that, and everyone looked around. And this is what he said, dear Father and Brother Christ, there is a brother who is ill, of no reason we know of, except in his own consciousness. But our meeting is over according to tradition. I am interceding for him out of love from the heart. And all around us here are asking from love of the heart. Only the heart can release you, Father, and release him from the misery. And I tell you, I felt like a charge of energy rush right through my body to where that ache was. And to this day, I don't have it. But on a conscious level. So the conscious meditation, the conscious communion carries tremendous oneness of power, is to understand it. As Jesus would say, the things I do, you will do also, and greater things shall you do. He didn't say lesser things. Remember that. We are all the walking potential of the Spirit, but we can sell ourselves short or be egotistical. There are times we can help others. There are times we can help ourselves. And yet there are times we must let others help us. No matter how much we know and how good we can be in the favor of the Spirit, there are times we have to let others help us. Give an example in my own life. One day, at my own clinic, I'd stumped my toe. And I have a patient who has a little boy, he's about 6 years of age. And he said, oh, Adano, can I rub it for you? Mm-hmm. By that time, one of my other sisters says, I'll fix it here, Adano. We know you can do it. I said, no, let my little friend Jason do it. And I put my foot out. And Jason took off his sock, got the towel, got the oil, and started rubbing my foot. With so much love, the pain was gone. But to see the expression of Jason's face was the whole joy. In that moment, he wanted to do, to feel so. And there is where the whole creative consciousness works. Now to block such a child from expressing love would have already interfered. John, you know Ram Talapur, his boy. But that's what I'm talking about. On a conscious level at times, you have to come down. And that the most unusual incident, and it's in a moment every day, and any incident that comes along, just be willing to go with it and experience spirit at work. Years ago, when I studied with Yogananda, I made this argument. I said, If the spirit is everything, why can't it not enter into daily mundane activity? And I got a letter back from Master who said that daily activity is the incidences that happen, and that's where spirit is, and you have to look at it. And the more I became conscious of it in meditation and come out of meditation and relate to the incidences around me, I realized that the meditation had just begun, and that really what I was sitting down and doing was just cleaning up the house and getting the ready for the guest, the unexpected principle to work on a conscious level, seeing it, feeling it, participating in it. Because life is, you see. You want to take a break and come back and ask questions?
There will be initiation tomorrow evening at 7:30 p.m. at our house, 56 Pine Dell. And you may call 779-296-6 if you have any questions. And if you plan to be there, bring that.
For the teacher.
Everybody is.
Thank you, Margie. Well, I know many of you are initiates and some are friends. You may have lots of questions you want to ask. So try and see if we can solve some of the questions. Yes.
You've been talking about your diet. Is there a special cleansing routine you would follow if you had to eat meat? Like sometimes certain cultures would really get insulin if one didn't partake.
It's very difficult to be a non-meat eater if you don't know your blood type, especially living in the Western world. You make more mistakes and get sick, and then we have more problems. If you know your blood type, that's an asset. But solar nutrition is a way to eat according to time. And therefore, once you know the time cycle of every product that is edible, you can eat it. Now, a cow doesn't eat another cow, but it certainly wouldn't be found climbing in a tree to eat a fruit. It would be eating grass, and the chicken will be digging for grain in the ground. And a fish doesn't come out of the water to climb on top of the land to eat any vegetable. And if you ever went fishing, you certainly ain't gonna catch them in the middle of the day. It's either in the evening or towards morning, just before the sunlight or goes down and come up. So each one of these creatures have a feeding time and a growing time and an active time or work time. Now if you're gonna use them for food, and it's not that they shouldn't be used for food, it's the reaction in your chemistry to your body at the time that is toxic to you. At the right time, it's an asset. A little is medicine. So a little of anything is medicine for the system. Too much is toxic for the system. The body is designed to process everything in this environment in its different forms, because the body carries all 144 elements in it and will process all the different forms around it. But it will process it correctly without any detriment at its correct time. If it is placed in the wrong time, then it will start to accumulate and become toxic to the body. So four-legged creatures and two-legged creatures, if you want to eat them, and man didn't come on this planet farming and didn't find the fruit and vegetables and orchards waiting for him, they were all thrown together in different areas, and you had to go walk and look for it and get lost and be edible for the creature who is hungry like you, and he may be two-legged or four-legged. See? So it's a matter of how you survived. And you'll notice that we don't ever eat the four-legged creature that eats its own kind. We eat the one that eats vegetables or grass. We eat deer. They don't eat their own kind. We eat sheep, pig, cow. They don't eat their own kind. But we don't turn and eat the lion. See what I mean? Now, there's a reason why they ate that, because these was creatures were the next in line for survival in terms of fruit and vegetables being so scarce. But the fruit and nuts on the trees were assigned to be eaten in the early primal time. But because there were no farmers growing it, you had to go look for it in the season it was there. So man primarily was a hunter, evolving to become civilized and cultivated as he is today. In today's time, we have access to every type of food, but we don't put it in at the right time, and we don't relate to it in its time cycle the way it grows. I once heard of a young boy who said, milk comes from cartoons. He never knew where milk came from. But then he found a can with a cow in it and a pile of cans, and he told his friends, come see where the mother cow is. And this was true, because he never knew that it came from a cow, but he thought they all came from cans. On the trees with nuts in today's time cycle where we live now, they are ideal for breakfast, fruits and nuts. They grow on trees. They get the first light where you are located on the planet. And wherever it is grown on the planet, it will get the first light. Trees with their fruits and nuts. Now, the second degree of light is directly overhead, straight down. Remember, fruits and nuts grows on trees. The tallest plant that grows in the middle of the ground, or directly under the sun shining overhead, is a grass called a sugarcane. It's not a tree. Neither is it a vine. Yet all vine plants grow on the surface of the ground. And imagine for one moment you owning a watermelon orchard. How many watermelons would be in a watermelon tree? You wouldn't want to walk on the one anyhow. Because the weight of the watermelon would split the tree apart. And you don't find exorbitantly large fruits on a tree. The largest fruit you'll find on a tree would be a papaya or the breadfruit. But they wouldn't compete with a watermelon. Nature grows them on vines, leave them there. And she puts vegetables that grow above the ground and the corn all within a certain light range. But then the four-legged creature comes along, and that's a cow. He doesn't need another cow. The sheep comes along, the pig comes along,
they're all eating off the ground, the grass. And the chickens eat off the ground. You see? And night time, we have food that grows under the ground that never gets no sun. All day it grows under the sun, it never, just the tops get sun, but the bottom part that is edible doesn't get sun. Could anybody grow a mushroom in sunlight? They'll go broke. Can you grow carrots and expose the carrot to the sunlight? You'll go broke too. The carrots is under the ground. The potato is under the ground. The peanut is under the ground. And the fish lives in the darkness of the water. And the egg is inside of the chicken. So their food that is contributive to our existence within another light range. The tops are exposed to the light, but the entire portion that is edible for the maximal use is in darkness. Now I eat everything because I know the time, but I also know my blood type. Now, a type A and an AB cannot be 100% non-meat eater. Not true. They can be 100% non-meat eater, A and AB. But they can't be 100% meat eater. So those people who have A or AB blood types, plus or minus, make wonderful vegetarians. But if you were to speak to Yogananda and ask him if he was a vegetarian, he said, "A what? I'm a proper eatarian." And that's a vast difference between a vegetarian and an eatarian now. A vegetarian is a person who eats Coca-Cola and French fries. But a proper eatarian is one who knows what type of food and their chemical balances, but doesn't say when. That's the only difference. But he knows the chemical balance and he knows how the food is structured. Now, solid nutrition only goes one step further to put time. A proper eatarian would be more classified as a macrobiotic eater, one who eats part of the structure and the chemistry, but not with the time. And a vegetarian is a person who would eat anything at the wrong time. But we call that a lunar nutritionist. See? Now, knowing the time makes the difference in the enzymic absorption and the body's ability to eliminate and handle it. So, years ago when I was sick in the hospital, I only broke my bones. I had no internal malfunction, but broken bones. And yet everything they fed me, and I was paying good money, I was getting sick and I was overweight. So I could not understand, and I asked the doctor, "How is this? I'm paying good money for all this good food and I'm still getting sick." And so, "You can't understand this, Delay. You don't have malfunction in the body, but you got broken bones." I said, "Yeah, it don't make sense. And yet I'm overweight too. I can assume my overweight is one of the causes." Then I started to experiment. And later I validated the experiment. I am a type O, just like a type B. B and O, plus or minus, we can't be 100% non-meat eater. But we could be 100% meat eater. But meat eating is not ideal if you don't know when. You'll get toxic and your body will break down. When I didn't know when to eat meat, and as a child I ate meat, and when I had my first colonic, I saw what
meat eating does to the body. If someone had told me you get worms, I would say you're crazy. But when I saw a tapeworm pass out, then I knew they were correct. And that is because eating incorrectly and not knowing the time, and not understanding how the body is functioning to do its elimination. Well, then I was in the hospital and I started to correct my diet. The first thing I experimented with an egg. They brought the egg in the morning because it's a typical way of eating in the Western world. Eggs and toast and orange juice. Nothing wrong with that, it's bacon. So I ate the egg, push away the rest. Since I was paying, I could have what is called optional eating and didn't have no other malfunction but broken bones. I said to the nurse, I'd like to have some eggs again for lunch. But when I ate the egg the first time and pushed away the rest, at 10 o'clock, they feed in the hospital at 7, see? Right on time. And at 10 o'clock, right on time, I got gas, aches and pains and grumbling. But the pain went away. Around 12 o'clock, they bring the lunch. And I asked the nurse, I said, can I have eggs again? She said, sure. Brought me eggs. And again, I had the eggs. And by 2 o'clock, I'm grumbling with pain all over, full of ache and stiffness, groaning and grunting. By that time, the nurse thinks I'm crazy. These dogs aren't Orientals, they're stupid, they love pain. That was what was going through her mind by then. And at night time, she said, what do you want this to be, another egg? I said, yes, nurse, I'll try another egg. Okay, she got me the egg. I had the egg. For the first time, I felt no pain, and I had the first real sleep that night. I was amazed. Next morning, I couldn't believe I slept without any pain or any gas reaction. It kind of feels funny to me. How is that? It's only an egg. A whole day I had egg. Morning I had it, I had the gas. Middle day I had it, I had gas. Night time I had it, no gas. I didn't have any connection to why. But the next day I says, I'll try it again, because this could be a fluke, you know. when you're experimenting, and you have to work on yourself first, because you don't know. Next morning I tried again. Had another egg, got gas the same time. Lunchtime, egg. By that time, the doctor came in and says, what are you trying to do, Mr. Lee? The nurse tells me you're on some kind of an egg binge. Because they check on you every day. I said, well, doc, I'm trying to see which food is compatible to my body. He says, oh? He says, what have you discovered so far? I said, well, last night I ate the egg and I didn't have no reaction. And morning and noon I'm getting reaction. And even now, this morning breakfast and lunch, I'm getting reaction. I said, that sounds interesting. Let me know if you don't get any reaction after you eat it tonight. Because I'd be interested in seeing why it's doing that. I ate it that night. I slept good. Next morning, no reaction. Well, bright and early, the nurse is there with the egg. On the third day, and he was there about 10 o'clock. He says, how did you make out? I said, well, last night, good sleep. This morning again, I just ate the egg at 7 o'clock and I still get it. He says, I'd like to examine you. And then he took my blood type. He says, well, we're going to keep watch on this, what you're doing, because this seems to be unusual that something like this should do that. The third day, again at night, no reaction of the egg. By that time, it dawned on me, I'm asking myself, where does eggs come from? As a child, I used to help my mother check the chicken when it's ready to lay for egg and go put it in the box and cover it over in a dark, shady spot. And then the chicken lay the egg and then she'll yak, 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 she laid the egg. But, these things go flying back through your mind. Darkness is associated with it. Evening is associated. It all starts to pull together. Well, I started then breaking down different foods like that and sorting it out. I started with the egg, then You know, they go with bacon. They give you bacon, they give you toast, they give you orange juice. And before you know it, the basic breakfast that you would have within a short space of time had already cataloged where it was ideal and where it was not ideal. Now this only applied to me. But then when you start to look at the formation of things, would it apply to others? You don't know till the other person is in the same situation. The bacon was okay in the middle of the day. In the morning and in the night, gas like that. The eggs were okay at night. The toast was okay in the middle of the day. Then I started to realize pigs are four-legged creatures. Grain grows like a grass in the middle of the day. And the orange juice is good in the morning. Imagine drinking orange juice and getting bellyache in the middle of the day and the night time. But what's very good in the morning, it grew on trees. I'd already worked out the very first basic breakfast of bacon and eggs, orange juice, and toast. And then from that on, I began to sort out the other foods. Now, in Canada, they love to pride themselves in knowing that they have the best seafood, Canadian salmon. And they love to feed it to you three times a day, as much as you can eat. And they remind you, it says, well, the British love their kippers in the morning. And I found that fish was only good for me at the night. In the morning and in the middle of the day, I was getting gas and throwing up. It wouldn't stay down, I'd get pains and cramps again. But at night I'd eat the salmon, no problem. Then I began to look at the fish objectively. It's a creature that lives underwater. In darkness, I look at my own structure. I'm originated as marine life, a sperm, in darkness. Then gradually, when I got out of the hospital and then become interested now in real research and studying, the doctor was very cooperative. And then he said to me, his name is Dr. Mason, he says, Adano, you'll never get rid of your weight until you have a colonic. A what, doctor? A colonic. They gave us enemas in the hospital to prepare you for operation, but a colonic was something I never encountered. He says, when you're out and they release you, you come to my clinic at home, and I have a colon machine, and I'll give you a colon irrigation. Well, when should I come, doctor? Oh, come on Friday. Good. You'll be released on Monday. I'm released on Monday, and I said to myself, I'm going to fast on water. That whole day I fasted on water, and I had three healthy bowel movements. Wow, was I happy. You know, under your own momentum, it's great. You know, then thou retreatest into thy innermost chamber. There you can have the highest prayers for God. Prayers of thanks. All right. The next day was Tuesday, and I fasted on water, and I had again three healthy bowel movements. The Wednesday, nothing. The Thursday, nothing. I'm fasting. No. I said, well, I'm going to see what this doctor is going to tell me now, because I know I'm a clean up man. I ain't got none in there. Well, I walk in, you know, proud in my feelings and think I got it all straightened out in my head. And I see this machine. Well, in those days, the machine was the real Henry Ford Model T's. And my friend John here has seen some of my machine. The models are a little better and productivity, you know. But they've come a long way from the original Model T models. And I got him the machine, and He gave me this column irrigation, and in 15 minutes, I was amazed to see what is coming out of my column, the equipment you can see. And I said to him, I said, Doc, isn't that corn? He stops the machine. He says, yes, it is. Why? I said, but you gave me the okay to eat corn only 6 weeks ago. He says, yeah, and I haven't touched it since then, that time when you gave the okay. And I haven't touched it. Now, you mean to tell me that's still in me? He says, I hate to tell you the truth, but that's the fact. I said, boy, I'll keep my mouth shut from now. He said, what do you mean? I says, I don't want to assume that I know anything about my body anymore. Because I fasted for 2 days straight on water, Monday and Tuesday, and had 3 healthy bowel movements, and I thought I had it all together. Well, I saw that I am interested in my body now, and I want to learn about it. Just for me, I'm willing to pay just to learn my body. He says, no, I can lend you all the books because you can read it, come in the clinic here, my clinic, and read it. And if you're interested in helping yourself to physical therapy, I'd be glad to help you, and then I can inform you where you can go and take some other studies. Well, I was sure interested because I wanted to know now why I had this. And then when I saw the worm, it really made me wake up to myself. I was missing the boat. I really didn't know anything. I assumed a lot of things but wasn't valid. Until I start cleaning up and really getting down to understanding nature and how it's operation, I began to see where the scriptures was right. When the scripture said, cleanliness is next to godliness, I used to quote it until I said one day, cleanliness is godliness, not next to, it is godliness. When you clean up your organism, you'll be surprised how internally synchronous you are with your environment. Before, you're always going to be off, always pulling here and there. Something always comes in to give you. But then I found out my blood type wouldn't allow me to be 100% non-meat eater. I tried for years and years to be 100% meat, non-meat eater, only to end up getting too alkaline. See, a type B and a type O, like my type, if we stay off meat completely, we become alkaline. We develop a disease called alkalinosis. This is, again, a little of something is medicine, none at all, is just as bad. And Paul didn't say to Timothy, drink a lot of wine for your stomach's sake. He said, drink a little for your stomach's sake. See, in those parts of the country, amoeba dysentery was very prevalent. So they had to know how to combat it. And a little wine for the stomach's sake was how they combated all the different problems of traveling around and trying to live in the country. Now, too much is no good, and none at all is no good. Nature is peculiar. 100% purity is not valid, and 100% degradation is not valid. They tend to converge like a funnel in your mechanism, and that's where you begin to realize that everything here is to be used, but no when. See, abstinence is good, but we have more sick people from those who try to abstain. And overindulgence is bad. Just as much you get more sick people from overindulgence. It is when you start to synchronize to the middle path, that's where Buddha came in centuries ago. And even today in Christianity, you see, and modern physics, it's still the middle path. Normal balancing of the chemistry of the body. All right. I tried to stay non-meat eater. I got alkalinosis. Alkalinosis is a type of disease where the skin gets very dry and cracks and peels, but it doesn't have any weeping material coming out of it. The opposite is acidosis. The very skin peels, but it weeps like a rash, like a cirrhosis. So that's the opposite, becoming too acid. The A and the AB, if they try to eat meat too long, they develop acidosis. But they can stay on non-meat eat all their life and never have the problem. Now, B and O, if we try to be non-meat eater all our life, we have the problem of alkalinosis. But if we use periodically the meat, or the fish, or the egg, to stabilize, we don't have the problem. But then when you look at your mother, and you look at pregnant people, you remember when the person is pregnant, at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, they walk over to the refrigerator for an ice cream cone and a pickle. Isn't that a fantastic combination at that time of the morning? Other people have all kinds of different cravings. We call that lunar nutrition. Simply because nature is striving to maintain a chemical balance in the body. You can eat a certain way, and with these odd moments, nature knows that the body is either getting too alkaline or too acid, and it's going to affect the maturing fetus. And innately, it directs the consciousness to reach out for these odd combinations to bring stability. Then we call it pregnancy type syndromes. That's another pregnancy syndrome, of reaching for something like that. But it's nature's way to make a balance in the body, and then you check the chemistry, it comes back normal again. And we always have to watch it. All right. When I decided to look at the timing more effectively and the types, then I realized my problem could be corrected. So I began to eat fruits and nuts in the morning. But really, modern science says every meal you eat must have protein, carbohydrate, mineral, vitamin, lipid or oil, and liquid. And if the meal doesn't conform to this formula, you're suffering from malnutrition. And nature has provided every form of mineral, vitamin, protein, oil, and liquid in each growth cycle to fulfill the requirements of that formula. Like it or not, we're returning back to nature. Protein in the morning, the highest protein comes from a nut. It has no uric acid. It's ideal in the morning after you break the fast. And the carbohydrate is from the fruit. And the oil is from the nut itself, the lipid. The vitamin and minerals are in the nut and the flesh of the fruit. And the liquid is in the flesh of the fruit. So the formula is satisfied chemically. Quanta is how much you take in. And that is within that framework of science. There's no argument there now. We can satisfy ourselves within the framework of one growth cycle. But let's look at something more objective than that. Everything has to be broken down in the mouth by the enzymes, so you have to masticate your food before it gets into the lower colon or stomach. There's no teeth there. So, where are your teeth located? In your mouth or in your feet? In your mouth, right? And they're made for breaking down hard products and getting the calcium and building up the action of the jaw. One of the problems with our health in absorbing food is the mechanical action of the jaw. That's why you find people who hurt themselves and the jaw is off. They have problems. So you go in the morning to eat. You need your fruits and nuts. Okay. Chew on hard products.
to get that jaw to work. And then in the middle of the day, protein again comes from two sources. Seeds, beans, grain. Beans and grains combined make complete protein. The cow doesn't eat another cow, so he doesn't get complete protein by eating his own kind. He gets complete protein by eating the grass and processing it through his organism. And then it becomes complete protein to be used by you. But it has uric acid to combat. And it dies in pain released by the adrenals. So you have a high concentration of adrenaline in the bloodstream, plus the uric acid from the animal. Yet, nature has made compensation for the absorption. Your body will handle it from noon to 6:30 within a whole 6-hour period for absorption and elimination. But the human body doesn't digest flesh. It's not designed to digest flesh. Otherwise, you'd be digesting your stomach with your hydrochloric acid. Flesh decomposes in the human body by intestinal heat and by chemical reaction, which drains off or leaches off the minerals from the tissue of the flesh. And then the minerals are utilized for building whatever is needed in the body. By the same token, you make uric acid. So we do need a little uric acid. Too much again, no good. And we do make adrenaline. And too much again is no good. And we do make alcohol. And too much again is no good. So to say you're going to live a life where you're not going to drink anything, it's kind of ridiculous when nature is manufacturing alcohol right in your body. Manufacturing uric acid and adrenaline and lactic acid in the body. But it's a quantum and the time that the body needs it to use it and phase it off. And your blood type is the important thing. So you can eat a little of the meat from the four-legged creature and the fowl in the middle of the day. But nature, knowing that, can't leave you like that. Nature came before you as the creative intelligence and put you together last, but is leaving you to find out by suffering, which is your teacher. I'm not your teacher. Your teacher is name is Mr. Suffering. That's the name of our teacher. And his wife is Mr. Love. This is love. That obedience is love, and if you listen to mama, you don't get hurt. But if you don't listen to papa, you really get hurt. So daddy is the teacher in the form of suffering, and mama is the teacher in the form of love. So Yogananda says it's easy to love God by following the laws of nature and not hurt yourself too much. And that's why he says God is mother. But if you really want to find out God as father, then disobey the laws and run into suffering, and then you learn the hard way. That's daddy's way. Okay. A little is medicine. Too much no good. And none at all is no good either, because the body is out of context. If you eat the chicken and the meat in the middle of the day for protein, or you eat the seeds and the beans and the grain for protein, the seeds and the grains will not give you the uric acid content. If you eat the flesh, which doesn't digest but decompose, you'll have the acid content. But how is nature going to compensate for that? Nature can't just leave you like that. There's a compensation. So nature provides you fruit. And she provides the malic acid in the fruit for the cleansing of the uric acids. An apple a day will keep the doctor away. What does an apple contain? Malic acid. But apples grow on trees. You mean to tell me if only the malic acid is found in apples, you'd starve if you can't find an apple tree any place if you're dying from a certain intoxication. So malic acid must be found in other foods of different growth cycles. It's found in the grape. So you have your grape, you can use that for your malic acid. But it's perfectly balanced. So a little wine for your stomach's sake. After you had your little meat or and you take a little schnapp of the wine, that sets the pace of elimination from the meat and the toxicity, and therefore the decomposition, and its effect doesn't stay too long and push it out. But when you go beyond a certain quanta, then you're making the body more sick. Just a little for the stomach's sake. All right. Nighttime comes now, but you have a longer length of light range from midday to 6:30 or 7 o'clock, where you can eat this heavy protein from flesh, and the body will process it. Maximum time is 4 hours for flesh. So you have 6 hours, so you know it's going to process with a little wine for stomach's sake, cleaning it out, or any fruit. But late in the afternoon, you need to flush out. Besides grapes, your nature has provided you fruit with the largest quantity of liquid for your organs that need to be flushed at that time. And that is the melons and the cantaloupes for flushing the kidney and the blood. The kidneys have to be flushed. And they have to flush out uric acid. The blood has to flush out uric acid. And you need that in the form of fruit. You need the potassium to flush it. And you need the malic acid in the grapes. So you know now, nature couldn't leave you like that. Why would she make all these creatures, and knowing fully well who's going to obey in the first place, when disobedience is the principle of evolution? Obedience is not a principle of evolution. You give anybody something and ask them to obey, you'll never get any work done. But tell them they can't do it, boy, you see how fast they get all the job done pretty quick. In my clinic is that I say to the girls, you can't operate this place when I'm here. You should see them operate when I'm gone. Because that's what triggers the consciousness to work. You have to give them a challenge. And they're going to prove to me that they can operate the place if I'm not there. But if I'm there, what happens? Everybody goes face off and do his own. Law of life. But it works. So, night food now comes in, and nature has to provide us. And she knows we're going to go off. And she provides seafood, egg, and vegetables under the ground. Again, we need protein to form the formula. Marine life has protein. Potatoes have protein. Peanuts have protein. Now for the non-meat eater, look what protein he has. Potato and nuts, right? And for the meat eater, what have we got? Egg and marine life. So they're both satisfied by nature. Again, it's the time and the quantum. Yet nature has to provide some way to compensate, to clean that body out. If you eat too much marine life and too much egg, you're going to get toxic. So nature has to provide some fruit again, a fruit, to clean that. But the fruit now has a different type of material for cleaning it. It has bromine. It doesn't grow on a tree.
and it doesn't grow on a vine. The bromine family are like a cactus. So the pineapple is a cactus family, it's bromine, and that is the cleansing action for the seafood or the egg in the body. So before you go to bed at night, a little pineapple juice, clean it out. By the same token, you need a little nip for your stomach's sake. Nature ain't going to leave you without leaving you have something to take. And then the bromine family should give you the maguey plant. It's called tequila. All right? That shows you I can eat flesh products and take care of the consequences within its own light cycle. I have protein, I have carbohydrate, I have minerals, vitamins, and I have the lipids and the juice. Okay. Every doctor says that the man came to him and told him he's not virile enough, and the wife is complaining. And the doctor says, I suggest that you go home and have a bowl of oysters. So the wife cooks him up a bowl of oysters and he's very virile. Marine life, high in what? Iodine, high in the vitamin E. The chemistry of the night foods are already set up by nature for certain parts of the anatomy. The regenerative organs are in between the legs. When they go off in their hormone balance, the DNAs and RNAs are off, you're not going to find too many foods having the chemistry to match it outside marine life. And therefore a little sardine comes in with the highest content of DNAs and RNAs. But sardines, where do they live? Where do they grow? In the darkness of the ocean, their marine life. Now, look at your own structure. Are you a composite of two sperms or a composite of two ovums? We're a composite of a sperm and an ovum. The basic chemistry that keeps these things going are long integrated within their cycle, how they will extract it from the body when the parents are eating. So there's no way we can seem to get around nature's own natural operation. We might as well synchronize with nature. One of the benefits of synchronizing with the way nature sets everything to go by light or eat by light is health. Everything starts to digest properly and eliminate properly. And the doctor told me once, he said, Adano, if you eat three times a day, you must have three bowls.